The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. They have a wide range of degrees at many levels. Whether you want to become a pastor, missionary, or seminary professor, Southeastern can provide you with the high-quality education and training that you need. Southeastern even provides a number of distance education options for those who are interested but cannot relocate. To learn more, visit sebts.edu/5LQ. That's sebts.edu/5LQ. Now, enjoy the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper. The episode you're about to hear is one we actually aired over a year ago in the early days of this podcast when Todd Adkins and Eric Geiger and I sat down to talk about the best leadership books and then the best reading habits for leaders. Because of our pipeline conference that we have going on this week, and because of the busyness leading up to that, we simply haven't been able to record as many episodes as we normally do. So we're going to air this one as a sort of a favorite repeat, and because it's one that we think is so valuable that it's worth re-listening to, because we list a whole number of books that we think are fantastic for leaders. So you'll hear some great practices, some great habits, as well as some of our favorite books on different topics for leaders. So sit back, enjoy this, take notes, and then go out and get any of these books that you haven't read yet, because they will definitely benefit you. Now enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper. I'm here with Todd Adkins, my co-host. He is the director of leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. And today we're joined by Eric Geiger, who is the VP of the Resources Division at Lifeway. And rather than interviewing Eric, we are going to talk about leaders as readers. So reading habits, best leadership books, good habits, bad habits. And these two guys who I'm with are great to talk to because they read an insane amount and have an encyclopedic knowledge of all things leadership books. I have set them up to fail.
That's
well, I would say that I am a reader. So I read two or three a month. Joker next to me reads. Sorry. Wait, this is candid.
It's fine. Go for it.
Boss Daddy.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. That's what I was looking for.
Boss Daddy next to me, he reads like to a week.
But you, Todd, read all sorts of blog posts and articles, which is something we want to touch on, because reading doesn't just involve books. It involves just the written word. So Absolutely. How important is it to be a reader for someone in leadership?
It's important.
How important?
To me, it's very important. And I knew you were going to ask that question, so I jotted down a couple of thoughts.
When you take notes, it's not a conversation.
It's not fair.
Do you bring notes to a conversation,
Eric?
This is like
putting a pitching machine in front of Kirby Puckett.
That means a lot to me. I don't know if it means much to Eric.
Wow, Kirby Puckett.
Well, I try to throw in one sports analogy for Barnabas on every one.
He Googled that right before this.
I don't have a manuscript. I just wrote down a couple thoughts.
Okay. Well, let's not interrupt your thoughts any further. Right. I apologize.
It's okay. It's really important for leading because reading helps sharpen your mind as a leader. So you constantly are reading coherent arguments, coherent logical cases made. And so when you read, when you constantly digest books, it causes your mind to think in that way. And so I think it increases your clarity as a leader, because as you're making a presentation to a group of people, as you're leading your team, you're under this constant diet of truly whoever you're reading their best stuff, because authors put pastors, leadership people, whoever, they really do put their best work into their books. And so you are reading the best of what they have to say, the best of what they have to offer, and you're reading it in a coherent fashion, a systematic, well-articulated case. So it sharpens your mind to be able to do that as well. And then it also keeps you learning and growing. And if, you know, it's an old cliche, but it's true. If you want your team to grow, you've got to grow. If you want the organization to grow, you've got to grow. And so reading helps you grow yourself mentally. So it helps you grow your team.
So you mentioned specifically kind of what it does for how you learn to think, creating
absolutely.
A thought
it does
process.
Help you think.
Yeah. So it's not just the content.
It's not just information.
Yeah. And so now don't get me wrong. I mean, you read a, you actually get great content from what you're choosing to read. But I think people also sometimes don't think about
right.
how it actually helps you even beyond the content. Kind of like when people would say, hey, when you go to college or wherever, you're not just going to learn, but you're going to learn how to learn.
Right.
When you read, you don't just enjoy that content. You actually learn how to think, learn how to present, learn how to articulate. So I think it helps.
That's a really helpful point, because in a genre like leadership, a lot of people say a lot of the same things.
Yep.
There's again and again and again.
Yes. But hearing different people say the same things in different ways.
Yes.
Speaks more to what you're talking about. So there is a benefit in reading, you know, a multiplicity of authors, because one of them is going to be very sort of A plus B equals C. Yeah. One of them is going to be a little bit more narrative. They're going to provide different ways to absorb, to learn, to see, to see the same things from a different angle.
It's going to be a fresh look on a certain subject as well. Whether you're talking about church life or business life, it's cyclical. The topics that come up are cyclical. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go back 15, 20 years and you're going to see culture being a big deal, and culture is a big deal again. And there's other mm-hmm. things that take place in between those periods of time, but it's stuff that comes around again. And then you have to go, just like, this is going to sound weird, but just like, you know, when you're looking at your Bible and you want to get deep, you go back to the sources. You have to go back to the sources. So if you look at Strength Finder, you can go back and find the actual study that was done, you know, in the 50s or 60s on that. Or if you look at culture, there's a guy named Edgar Schein,
yeah,
who is the godfather of culture.
When was he around? Do you know?
50s, 60s.
Okay.
So if you look at,
you don't mean culture in the world. He's an organizational culture.
Absolutely.
Guy.
I'm sorry. Organizational culture. When you look at shaping and cultivating organizational culture, and you want to learn how to do that, that is the guy that you go to. If you're writing about that, that's the guy that you go to.
You can't write about culture without reading some of his stuff.
So
I discovered that same thing. So I read a fair amount, but I read more broadly I haven't read a ton of leadership.
But I would say, and I want to follow up with that there, is that sometimes when people think, hey, I just need to read leadership to mm-hmm. learn leadership, you actually, you learn more when you read outside of your discipline.
Absolutely.
And then it actually spurs some thinking
right.
into your discipline. And so there's great benefit in reading broadly, even to then apply things specifically right. to your discipline.
One of the things that's about reading specifically, you know, talking about keeping your mind sharp, is that we'll jump on to the next question real quick here. But a lot of people try to learn, you know, TED Talks and videos and things like that, and that provides a certain amount of interaction. But there is something distinct about the absorption and the mental process and what you retain when you read, you underline, you yes. know, you mark up your books,
yep.
those kinds of things, or highlight in your Kindle. I don't know that one is better than the other. We can get into that in a second. But reading has a specific way of sharpening the mind, as opposed to watching videos of other smart people and things like that. Yep. But the idea of reading paper versus Kindle, highlighting, writing in your books, jumps into our next question, which is, what are some of the best ways to absorb a book? And how do you guys read a book? So, like, actual techniques for reading a book.
I'm still a paper guy. I probably have 60 or 80 books on my iPad. When I get those books, those are books that I'm like, man, I don't want to wait 3 days for it to get here. Mm-hmm. I want to read this today or tonight.
Or it's on sale for $2.99.
Yeah, or I see one of your tweets and I you know, you let me know that there's a cheap deal on Kindle or something. So I hit that. But most of my reading I still do in physical books. I thought, and it probably 90% of that is just my own personal preference, that's how I started. I like marking it up. Mm-hmm. I know you can mark it up on an iPad, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. It's a little bit like clicking bookmark on a link when you highlight in a Kindle. It doesn't have quite the same sort of tactile absorption, yep. notes in the margin, that kind of thing.
And then the other for me is I read recently that there was research done that you actually do retain more in physical. It was actually, I think it was a Michael Hyatt post. You actually retain more in physical books than you do electronic. But I think it doesn't, I mean, that's the most important is to read, you know. So mm-hmm. if you're doing it digitally or you're doing it physically, but I'm actually still a physical guy. All right, here's a quote I jotted down. You're going to roast me for actually having a note and being prepared for this podcast. But here's a Sir Francis Bacon said this. And this is a good one. Some books are to be tasted, others swallowed, and some few to be chewed and digested. So others have iterated that quote and said, hey, some books should be browsed and perused, and other, you know, few should be.
That's actually how I choose between whether or not I'm reading digitally or on paper.
That's good.
The ones that are just sort of the quick, like your vacation novels that
I read those digitally.
You know, we talked with Dave Ramsey not long ago, and he said fiction makes airplanes fly faster. So I'll pull out a Kindle on an airplane and knock out, you know, half of a Clive Cussler novel or something like that. But I'm not gonna go buy the paper version of that and that kind of thing. So those are ones that I want to get my hands on, underline, write in, be able to go back and look at my underlines, those kind of things.
I would say I'm very similar to Eric in that I want a physical copy of the book. If you look at my books, it's so amazingly painful when somebody treats my office as a library.
I know.
And comes in and borrows a book because my notes are in that book.
Yep, mine too.
So if it's a decent thought,
it's like an archive of learning. It's not just not just a book.
Well, I do an executive summary of every book. I don't like type it up and write it down, but the things that I want to pull out of it are in the front and back of the book.
It's also Cheeto stains and Dorito stains on his books.
There's some Diet Mountain
Dew
in there.
Pretty bad.
Looks like he peed on the book.
Well, need
that's great, man.
You need caffeine in order to read quickly. But those front page, those blank pages in the front and the backs of the books, that's what they're
totally
for.
Well, is to take notes. Take it as a compliment. Maybe people are borrowing your executive summaries and they're just ignoring all the pages
in the
book.
They probably do.
Now, what I do in the front and back is so if you go into my office, pull a book out, and it's mentally there for me. So I know someone says, man, Eric, I want you to do a talk on this, or can you give a blurb on this? Or I know I'm going to hit on this subject. I know I can walk into my office and pull out John Cotter's Leading Change, go to the front or the back matter of the book where I have tons of notes and page 17. So on the front or the back, I'll write something that really I feel is important. Page 17. Three ways to assess culture. Page 28, four important habits. You know, and so I basically use the front and back to note things that are in the book to go to.
One thing really quick is
quickly.
I'm sorry. Okay. I work at a publishing house. Okay. I should learn to speak English.
You should.
You learned in Kentucky. English is really your second language.
We're lucky then. I'm not saying.
Hey, how are you so tall, man? Your parents are not tall.
My grandfather was full Dutch. Okay. He was huge. He was like 6'5 and 350.
All right.
Massive.
Sorry.
Boom. All right. Thor. No, just kidding. The most important book that you may ever read is actually Mortimer Adler's How to Read a Book. So I think it's University of Chicago is where he was out of, I think. But he basically talked about the dimensions of reading, different types of reading, practical reading, informational reading, comprehensive reading, because he would say practical and informational, you can only get so much knowledge from. If you want to get more knowledge, if you want to truly ingest that, you actually have to have experience. But he would put the caveat, if you did have comprehensive reading, that you could get almost a little bit of accelerated learning. So that was important. And he talked about analytical reading and different types of reading, different types of approaches to reading. So I would highly recommend that book.
I was assigned that in high school.
And I didn't read it.
No, I read it. I hated it. But that's because I liked reading what I wanted to read, not what I was assigned to read. I really probably ought to revisit it because it's probably a lot better than my stupid 16-year-old self thought it was.
Well, the overall gist to this question for me is how to approach a book or how to absorb a book is as you approach a book, know what you're going to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, hey, this is going to be a fiction. This is going to be a quick read. And then there's some that I'm going to grab a lot of things from this. And this is going to be a book I go back to. Mm-hmm. So if it's a book I'm going to go back to, I do want to interact with it more, make clear notes. If this is going to be something I just learn passively, like you're saying, or is this going to be something I need to grab some active?
And sometimes you realize you had the wrong expectations. So you pick up a novel and you think it's just a quick read, and you realize this is chock full of wisdom. So maybe you open up Evernote or you grab your pen, however you record things, and you start taking your notes on it. Let's jump on to our third question, which is, What are good reading habits? So we were just talking about sort of reading techniques. Now I'm talking about reading habits. How do you build it into your life? How do you set goals in terms of what kinds of books to read? How many do you set goals? So sort of the reading life. How do you, that whole thing.
Okay, that's big. Because to me, you can't just, hey, I'm going to, someone's listening to this. Hey, I'm going to start reading. Well, what? I mean, there's a gazillion books. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah, walk into a library and you'll just go into sensory overload. Nah,
I'm gonna start reading. That you can't just say I'm gonna start reading. You actually have to. That'd be like saying I'm gonna start exercising. Well, what are you going to do? How are you gonna exercise? When are you gonna exercise? How am I gonna read? How am I gonna approach my reading? To me, every year I set some categories that I'm gonna read in, and some of those categories have been consistent over the last several years. And then I choose books in each category, and I attack.
So you choose the books at the beginning of the year, not just the categories.
I choose the categories first, and then I'll choose several books that fall. But then I end up adding more,
or replacing some.
Yeah, or hearing of another one, or often sometimes you'll read a book and they'll reference the research in another book, and then you end up going and grabbing that book. So to me, great reading habit would be, you know, set some categories you want to read in.
Do you set a goal for number of books?
I haven't. No, I read a lot, but I don't have a.
Because I feel like every year, you know, December, January.
That's exactly when I do it.
You see the best books I read in.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which
yeah.
are great posts.
Yeah, they are.
You know, they
sometimes is books I bought.
Yeah, exactly. Best books I intended to read. But then you also see the books I hope to read, intended thing. And the last couple of years, maybe it's because I'm on Goodreads, which, by the way, is a great social tool for getting book recommendations, seeing book reviews, sharing what you've read, keeping track of what you read. It's pretty handy. Goodreads is better for certain genres. If you're a fiction reader, you get better recommendations there. It's a great discovery tool. You see books that somebody else reviewed. I didn't even know that guy had that. You know, I didn't know the author had written that book. For me, it's a tool for keeping track of what I have read. And then so I can go back to it and go, oh, that's right. You know, so if I'm writing the best books I read in 2014 post, I just go back and look at Goodreads and go, oh, yeah, those are the four I rated 5 stars. Those are the books.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say a little bit more specifically, what about when do you guys read? Because I think the biggest excuse people use for not reading is I don't have time, which, okay, how do you overcome that? Because you are very busy people.
Yeah, I mean, I have a kid that's in kindergarten, one that's 4 and one that's 2. And so when that started to happen, you know, 6 years ago, that, of course, really changes your life. And you have to make decisions about what's important and what's not. If you look at Collins, you know, he'll tell you, say no to the TV. Turn off the TV. In fact, take
the TV
out of your house.
Consistently from leaders doing interviews for this podcast is you ask them about time management. How do you get so much done? Turn off the TV is probably the number one response.
It's a discipline. For me, I've had to put accountability in place. One of the best things that happened to me was I kind of decided, okay, I'm going to tweet through a couple books a month. And I go ahead and I say, I'm going to be tweeting through this book in a week.
You make a promise that you have to keep.
Yes. I've only broken that once. And
wasn't that when you had a herniated disc or something? So you had an excuse.
There are no excuses to breaking a promise.
Except death. Is death, death an excuse?
Yeah. But no, that's really for me. That's how I do it. I don't necessarily have a number of books that I'm going to read or anything like that. Now sometimes I'm going to do it because it's a friend and I know it's going to be a good book. Lominick's book, Humble Hungry Hustle, when it comes out, I'm there because I know it's going to be good.
And he's a friend.
So of course I'm going to do that. Of course I'm going to tweet
Humble brag.
All right. So at the very beginning, we talked about just real briefly, the difference between reading a book and articles, blog posts, non-book material. I guess the broader question is sort of what's the breakdown? What's the benefit of each kind? And then maybe just personally, how do you engage each differently or set goals or those kind of things?
I think the key is realizing the author who writes blogs and the author who writes books are writing them with two different purposes. And so it's
even if they're the same author.
Yeah. So when I write a book and I write a blog, which I do both, the people who tell me, hey, man, you got to do this better on your blog, they are actually telling me to do a different purpose than when I write a book. So it's basically, hey, real quick snippets, bullets, high level, boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
That's the best blogs, so they say. This nebulous they, so they say.
They say a lot of things.
The indeterminate forces that determine page views is who they are.
Well, that's the they. They say that they want, you know, quick snippets, bullet points, list, whatnot.
Yep. Listicles, six reasons for this, seven ways to do that.
Yep. Very different from when I write a book, which you're setting a table, mm-hmm. you know, and you're building a coherent theses. You know, I mean, you're really going after a subject deeply.
Setting different. The table versus throwing drive a through. Bag
versus eating
out
a
the drive through.
Yeah. So just realize that if you read blogs expecting the blog to do for you what reading a book will do, then you are going to be very shallow. You're going to have a whole bunch of lists.
Hey.
I said if you're expecting the blog to do for you what a book would do for you. I read blogs.
Yes.
But I'm understanding that those are. Healthy Twinkies.
It's a granola bar on the way to a meeting.
There you go.
It's one of those like I need to get through until my next meal.
Hey, yeah. I think it depends on who you're reading. Sometimes it's a Cliff Bar.
Okay, but
there's some still, vitamins right on there.
Is that the point? They're disgusting.
It's still protein. A bar. It's still a bar.
It is still a bar. I'll agree with that. But I will say there's things that if you have an author that you really like and they are they're bloggers. Then sometimes they will consistently give you Cliff Bars. They're not just giving you a granola bar or something like that.
Yeah, and also often
you're going to get whatever their next book is.
You are. They're testing ideas. They're if they are a transparent author or slash blogger, they're passionate about mm-hmm. this thing, or they're this is what the Lord's teaching them, or this is what they're learning. And so that initially might make its way into a blog, and then it becomes a more coherent thought for them. That becomes a book.
It's like, I think it was Jonah Berger, the author of Contagious, that, you know, he had a lot of moxie because he was like going after Gladwell, basically saying, I'm better. And I don't know that it was a really good book.
It's a great book, but I followed
his blog before.
He said it's not just a few people, you know, it's not the... It kind of goes against Tipping Point. Yeah. He essentially goes, Contagious is a little bit of a rebuttal to Tipping Point.
Yeah. Also thinking about HBR must reads on pick a topic. Mm-hmm. So Cotter, insanely good writer on leading change, but you can also look at HBR articles on change management or leading change.
HBR Best Reads is basically a way for them to monetize articles that they've already been paid for.
But my point is, it's a long form of article.
Yeah.
And those can be gold.
That's writing rule number one. Never sell something just one time.
Yeah.
If you can figure out how to sell the same thing four or five times, HBR is masters.
Yeah, HBR is really, they know how they're doing. But they are probably serving a different constituency with that. So it's not unethical or a bad practice by any stretch. No. I mean, mm-hmm. the people who read HBR on a consistent monthly basis probably aren't buying the five best.
No.
And what they are doing is they're creating an archived resource that you can go back to. So you get HBR's 10 best articles on marketing or marketing strategies.
Yeah.
That's something that sits on your shelf and you use it as a resource. All of those articles are somewhere online, but you're not going to go back to them. Even if you bookmark them, they'll gather virtual dust somewhere on your feed reader and you'll never go
back
to
shows,
them.
Which shows that people really, they actually do need help compartmentalizing.
Yeah, and focusing.
And editing.
Well, so we've talked about HBR. You both mentioned Cotter, a handful of other authors. All this talk about reading, the natural place to finish up is book recommendations because any leader who is a reader is always looking for another one.
You want to give us categories and we have to choose like just one?
You can pick one or two, you know, because I'm sure some of them you have a couple of favorites, but no lengthy explanations. Let's just give titles, authors, and just sort of the thing that stands out in your mind about it. So best books, first broad category. This is the best actor, best actress. What is your favorite or best overall most influential book on leadership?
The Bible. Just kidding. That's a given.
Good Bible juke. Let's get that out of the way. Boom. All right. Now, other than the Word of God, what have we got?
On leadership, it's probably going to be Spiritual Leadership by Sanders because it has so much of the Bible in it. Mm-hmm. You can read one of those chapters in 10 minutes.
Yep.
If you just go for knowledge, if you go for in-depth, an in-depth look, if you look at the scripture references, if you start to push them in and apply them to your heart, you're looking at some extensive time. And it's a classic, and you said I couldn't talk about it.
Yeah,
but the reason why it came about was because I think it was in the 60s, you had all these missionaries that were washing out on the field. The retention rate was horrible, all these things. And so this was, and I can't remember the denomination, maybe Eric does, but this was this, you know, missionary organization, denominations, this was their answer to it. And it has had great effect in the church, I think, on spiritual leadership and specifically.
Yep. Eric?
My number one go back to read for overall leadership, spiritual leadership, Oswald Sanders.
Yeah, I just read it a couple years ago for the first time. Had heard about it, obviously, since whatever it came out in the 60s, I think. And phenomenal book. I really like Drucker's The Effective Executive. It's another one that every author after him copied.
Yeah.
So you'll see stuff in there and go, oh, that's where they got it from. Sure. And then Patrick Lencioni's The Advantage, to kind of go a little bit less spiritual, is a phenomenal one on organizational health. So it's a little bit broad. It's sort of him taking his principles and that he's put in all these little books and putting it in a big one. You didn't like that one, Todd?
No, it really bothers me that I haven't read it.
Oh, yes.
I know. I'm like, how did I miss that?
Let's move on while I'm still ahead. I like this because I'm going to get behind real quick. All right. Second category, leading change. Todd.
Well, I already know what Eric's going to say, so I'm not going to say that one.
We both mentioned Cotter on Leading Change. Cotter.
It's a classic book.
Part of our problem is we've
known each other for 14 years, and we're a lot alike, and we're completely different at the same time in some of those areas. But books and love of books, I think, is one of those things. I would say if you want to look for a follow-up book, and I'll let him break down Cotter, but Leading Change Step by Step is one of those books that really takes, and that's by Spiro, S-P-I-R-O. I can't remember the first name. But
it's a Leading Change Step by Step.
Leading Change Step by Step. So it's gonna give you tactics. It's going to give you templates and really stories that really back that up. So it is the practical how-to follow-up to classic Leading Change, I think. It'll reference back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, but Cotter's Leading Change to me is a classic book on change management. Excellent. He writes a lot since then, but you really still see him going back to Leading Change. I mean, his nine principles in there continue to come out in all of his subsequent writings. William Bridges wrote a book called Transitions, which is really helpful as well. Basically, when you make change, helping identify what people are going to give up, what you're asking them to give up, and then how to bridge that over to then the benefits of the new.
I haven't read a ton on Leading Change. One that stands out in my mind is Switch by Chip and Dan Heath. Yeah. They do a great job of weaving in real life examples.
Yeah,
so for those of us who are not sort of high level conceptual leaders, they do a great job of showing how it works in real life, doing their research. It's a really good one. All right, next category. And this one I'm sure you'll have some great thoughts on. Communication, best books on communication. Eric, you can go ahead.
There's a book, old school book, The Seven Laws of the Learner.
Okay.
That to me, so communication isn't just, you know, how to speak better, or, you know, how to form a great Zen presentation. You know, there's books on that, but also, I mean, realize that you're speaking to people, you're communicating to people. So understand how people learn, how people process. I think that oftentimes communicators or those who want to increase their communication skills don't think of the listener. So that's the seven laws of the learner.
I Made to Stick again by Chip and Dan Heath. My pool of books to choose from, and this is a little bit smaller. That one is one that I would say anybody who does public speaking, writing, presentations would benefit from, because they give these rules of communication, again, with real life examples of how they work and sort of showing, if you don't do this, it comes off like this. If you do this, it comes off like this. Really helpful. And then just, I focus a lot on written communication as somebody who does a lot of writing. On Writing Well by William Zinsser. I'm reading it right now. And it is... It is essentially adapted from his class notes at Yale. Hmm. And it is like a college writing course, but not boring. And he shows how to write well as he writes it. It's brilliant. Stephen King's On Writing is another really good one if you want to focus on just on your written communication specifically.
That's good.
Todd?
I'm going to go with more, I guess, almost modern take, church modern take anyway, would be Stanley, just because he's such a great communicator. Communicating for a Change is 7 or 9 principles that are really, really good, really solid, that I think is anybody can apply. And then I know he's done some other stuff on
which
vision.
Books? Are you thinking particular Stanley books like Communicating for Change?
Yeah,
or?
Communicating for a Change would be that one that breaks down those principles. And then I know he has one on visioneering, but then there's like a little book that's Making Vision Stick.
Stanley is a good guy to look at if you want to figure out. I mean, if you just want to watch somebody
communicate
who does it well, you can pick up a lot from watching him.
Absolutely.
All right, next category, and let's try not to do repeats because there could be on some of these. The next one, the soul of a leader. So soul care for leaders, looking after your own heart. Who wants to go first?
Robert Coleman's Master Plan of Evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
It's written on how to reach the many by focusing on a few. But every time I reread that or look at it with a group of people, my own soul is definitely challenged on it. Am I a leader that others will want to follow? Am I a leader that actually has something to offer that's of eternal significance and eternal value?
Mm-hmm.
Am I a leader who really is investing in people and not just worried about platform or a talk or the organization as a whole, but to actually care for people? Am I going to leave something that is of lasting value? And if so, I'm going to develop others and care for others. So that my soul is always challenged with that book, Master Plan of Evangelism. It's classic.
On this one, I took it kind of broader because I didn't look specifically at soul of a leader, but just sort of soul care in general. And one of them is more leadership specific. The other is more just the heart. The first is Rescuing Ambition by Dave Harvey, talking a lot about godly ambition versus selfish ambition. And leaders tend to be ambitious people trying to climb the ladder, trying to do things best. Yeah. That book breaks it down so well because it lifts up ambition. It doesn't say, you know, that's an unchristian thing, that's arrogant, but it does shape what kind of ambition is good. So I found that one really helpful. And then the other one is Counterfeit Gods by Tim Keller, because it talks all about the idols.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a great read.
That we, you know, that we build into our own lives, and things like money and power would be on the list, things that leaders often gravitate towards.
If you aren't, after reading Counterfeit Gods, in the corner in a fetal position, repenting of something, you're not a Christian.
I think that's probably true.
Because it's such a soul-searching book. If you're like, man, I don't have anything to repent of, then man, you have not a sense at all of your own sinfulness.
Right.
I was going to say, I remember in seminary, one in particular that just comes to mind. I mean, of course, even though I'm not allowed to repeat it, I will say Oswald Sanders, Spiritual Leadership. But it is Work of the Heart, Reggie McNeil. I know it's probably not the deepest. It's no Counterfeit Gods.
Todd, no one's ever accused you of being the deepest.
This is true.
This is very true.
However, it walks through, I think, Peter, Paul, Moses, and Jesus, their lives. And you know, it was at the time, it really, I think, provided a good soul-stirring read.
All right, last category, leading a team.
I'm reading books right now with a group of young leaders on our team, in our organization. So I just yesterday walked through this book with a group, and it's a real quick read, Leadership and the One-Minute Manager by Blanchard. Basically helps you understand that you're not just leading a team as a whole, but there's people on the team, and that each person has a different level of development, even different levels of development based on different aspects of their role or different aspects of their job, and how to lead them where they are. So it's really a servant leadership approach. You as the leader adjusting to team members instead of demanding that everybody adjust to you. So it's a really helpful there's a real helpful framework in there on how to identify where people are and how to lead them best.
I would say five dysfunctions of the team.
That's a good one.
Cioni. It's a classic. Just a classic.
Yep.
It's easy to understand. It's practical. It
really helps diagnose things that you see going wrong in your team.
It's a great book for a team to walk through as well and just digest together.
And I'm going to go a slightly different direction on this one and throw out a couple biographies because that's something we haven't talked much about, but I think that is a way to learn leadership in many cases even more effectively than a leadership principles book. Churchill by Paul Johnson. It's a short biography of Winston Churchill, but covers all of the essentials, and Johnson is a fantastic history writer. The Steve Jobs biography, it is as much of a lesson in how not to do things.
I agree with you 100% on that.
What's that?
I agree. I mean, I read that one, Isaacson's biography.
Yeah.
And I'd say the same on Bezos' biography. I mean, both of those guys, I mean, accomplished a lot of things, but I'm thinking, man, I don't know if... I do know. I do not want to adversely impact the people I lead that way.
And then if you want one that's almost exactly the same, but an entirely different arena, is Michael Jordan, A Life by Roland Lazenby. I just finished that one not too long ago. He was Steve Jobs, just go from Silicon Valley to the basketball court, and they're the exact same person.
Really?
But fascinating looks at how to lead a team and very much how not to lead a team. So those are suggestions that I would have on the team leadership side of things.
I'm going to read the Jordan book this weekend. That sounds like a good one.
It's like 800 pages. I don't know if you'll get through
I'm going to read it this weekend.
It's a really good one. You were going to say something, Don?
I have nothing to contribute.
Well, we've gone a little bit longer than we normally do. I hope we kept it interesting and informative. That was this episode of Five Leadership Questions Podcast. Jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. We would love it for our own egos and our own sake, but really just to help other people discover the podcast and your thoughts on it. Tune in next time. Thanks so much for listening.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.